Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Free Odyssey app.
It appears right now that somebody tried to carjack an off-duty police officer in an unmarked vehicle. We know that this was called in as some kind of an attempted carjacking, but we're still waiting for the details. This happened in the Northeast at Holm Ave and Willett Street, Northeast Philadelphia. We're still trying to get all the details and the story, but the off-duty officer, bottom line here, is shot a suspect, reportedly a carjacking suspect. So two cars involved, two shots fired, and we know at the scene the off-duty officer's unmarked vehicle could be seen with a shattered driver's side window. So I just want to put that out to you that the officer did not suffer life-threatening injuries. So that's the report. Yeah. But it's an incredible story of what's happening in our city. So we have that going on. Also, if you haven't heard, I'm assuming that you're coming from us at Kale and Company, but I always have to give the headline that this historic United States port strike, this affects us here in Philadelphia, nearly 50,000 union strong across the East Coast and the Gulf as well. They suspended their strike after 3 days. It's a tentative agreement which is reached on wages, and that's according to the International Longshoremen's Association and the U.S. Maritime Alliance. They are back to work this morning here in South Philadelphia at the dock, and as well at the docks, and as well across the country. I'll just ask the question on this one as I move forward. Just want to give this real quick. Ron DeSantis, Governor Ron DeSantis, as he came out about lunchtime yesterday, I have to just pose the question, just moving forward over the next couple of hours. Was this a piece of it? Was his leadership that was definitive in him saying, look, we have storm-ravaged areas, and we desperately need supplies? He right away had a plan. He told you about the plan that's already in place, that was in place in the morning, yesterday morning, that he was issuing the National Guard to go out, working with state police. They were going to have zero interruption of any supplies not being loaded because he declared it an emergency. Did that emergency declaration take away from the strength of the union prioritizing, and I'm not minimizing their priority to say, hey, we deserve equal pay of what our counterparts on the West Coast, but did it put things in perspective as we're learning about the death toll rising? That's one of my questions, because DeSantis, by and large, getting kudos and getting high praise for that leadership. That happened about lunchtime, and then we heard
that being rerouted. So Florida's open. We want to use our resources to be able to get all this stuff to the market so that people are able to use what they do. We have 16 different deep water seaports. We will work with you to get critical commodities to shore and promptly plugged into the supply chain. At my direction, the Florida National Guard and Florida State Guard will be deployed to critical ports affected to maintain order and, if possible, resume operations.
So there it is.
Would otherwise be
that happened
down
at lunchtime. Okay, and then after sundown, we heard that there was a tentative deal pushing it off until at least January 15th. No word on if they've come to any kind of a deal as far as grandfathering people in with the issue of automation, but at least they have suspended it. Did that put things in perspective for the union to say, you know what, not for nothing, we've done the three days, we made our point? So I'll put that out to you, and that really brings us to what do I think is the big story of the day, of the week, and probably of the year? The heartbreaking story, this is heart-wrenching, as you hear, especially in North Carolina, but these six southern states, and I'm including Florida in that, Hurricane Helene now as it's distinguishing itself as one of the deadliest storms to hit the United States of America. Wow. This century, the death toll surpassing 215, and that is rescue crews still searching for survivors. But as I'm speaking, the hope is fading. And so I'll get into the financial aspect of it, but just think about what these individuals, as our president, Joe Biden, as he last weekend, okay, this thing hit, and we knew it was going to hit all week, right? We knew the path of it as it was striking Florida, the northern part of Florida, especially worse. But we knew this was striking last Thursday. So Over the weekend, then, last weekend, President Joe Biden, Vice President Harris, where were they? Well, Biden was here in our area in Delaware. They were not in this storm-ravaged area, right? And so you think about this. Falling trees right now, what are they facing right now? And by the way, if you look at the forecast for especially the western part of North Carolina, Asheville and west, those western points, there's rain in the forecast today as well as tomorrow. So couple that with the fact that when Biden finally did visit yesterday, and we reported that, and Dan, thank you for that yesterday, they had to suspend all of their operations as far as the private chopper people who were making rescues on a bright sunny day with very little wind from noon to four. They had to suspend those rescues because that's when Biden, the team, chose to come in. And any president, or, you know, especially a president comes in, the air traffic, that's just protocol for anybody. So they had to suspend that. Right now, what are they dealing with? Falling trees, raging floods. And this is the aftermath. Still about a little under a million people still without power, and the death toll rises by the second, and people's hope is fading. And so people dying across these six states, Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee, Virginia, and yes, it's worst in western North Carolina. So Trump was there before our president could get there, and certainly before the Veep, and now Trump, you know, heading back again today, I believe, to Georgia and North Carolina. But among them, just so many stories that we hear. A mom with her 7-year-old son and her parents. And I heard this on a Christian station as they were interviewing mom who was saying how she was praying and grieving for the loss of her son and her parents. A 7-year-old named Harmony and her 4-year-old brother, Derek. That, you know, these siblings, the tale of how they died, and the family's oak tree crashed into their bedroom. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Last night, I will say, for Jesse Waters, did this interview with this man who is, you know, and people are telling their stories. This was so emotional. This is Jordan Lanning, and he's talking about, I want to go to cut D2C. As he responds to what's going on and his personal heartbreak.
How have you felt the response has been so far?
It's too late. I mean, they took too long. It took them 5 days to get here. And I mean, it took 5 days for Biden to come here, and he didn't think we were worth coming down to see himself. He had to fly over on his way to Raleigh. It's disgraceful. I mean, they keep saying we the people. No, there is no we the people. It's them versus us. So they're not for us. It's all about them. They tell us what we need instead of listening to us.
And so when you think about the death toll rising by the minute, when you think about the storm aftermath, and at the same time, we're hearing from the Biden-Harris administration that the confirmation that, yes, we are, as a nation, you know, FEMA is financially depleted due to, in part, the fact that FEMA, why is it depleted? Because they spent some $1.4 billion on dealing with the crisis of illegal migrants across our country.
I want to sneak in a Big Al from Mullica Hill here, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay.
Big Al, you're talking right exactly what Don's saying there. What you have to say, sir?
Well, I'm pretty upset with this whole situation now. With spending all that money on the illegals and leaving American citizens suffering like they are right now. If this doesn't get Donald Trump over the top, there's nothing in this world that will. And it's just with all these people hurting. These are Americans, you know, people that have been paying taxes, working for, you know, patriots of America, and you got this stuff by this. This so-called sleepy president and Harris and all this, you know, everything they're doing, it just disgusts me so much. And I wish I could say the words that I want to say, but, you know, I can't do that. I know that. But, man, if people don't wake up in this country, this is where we're heading, and this country is through if Harris wins the election.
Thank you. And I know you're upset. So many are upset across the nation watching this. And to hear the administration officials admit that FEMA is depleted, and the money they've spent on folks coming from other parts of the country. And then if we complain about it, you know, if we complain about it in the past, we're called all kinds of names, or, oh, this America First agenda, how wrong that is. Well, now you see why.
FEMA is tremendously prepared. This is what we do. This is what they do. And the key here, Rebecca, is also to make sure that the communities who are potentially impacted are prepared as well.
It's infuriating. It truly is. And he should be fired, by the way. And we've talked about the fact that earlier this morning that these farmers, just private people, people coming together with any kind of farm equipment, anything. And by the way, farmers coming from as far as Wisconsin. See, this brings, you talk about the different states.
I do have the rest of that mayor.
Okay, go ahead.
We are meeting the immediate needs.
Really?
With the money that we have. We are expecting another hurricane hitting. We do not have the funds. FEMA does not have the funds.
Does not have the funds.
To make it through the season.
Unbelievable that he had to acknowledge that. This is on Biden. This is on Harris. This is this administration. If you think you're angry, you know, listen to, again, well, here's Jordan, who was on last night being interviewed by Jesse Waters.
You hear the government saying they ran out of money. They're going to need more money, and that they gave it away to all of these migrants that came here. They came here against the law. How does that make you feel as an American citizen?
Extremely angry. They're putting other people before their own. I mean, I feel betrayed. I feel like we're not worth it to them.
I was in tears last night as I was listening to the debate and with my kids. And so I was seeing these clips coming down, and just, it's just to imagine that, to imagine you have friends and family and you look around and you realize with the way that the weather is, the heat, the humidity, and that this is now days that your loved ones have been missing. There are horrifying reports even from some people who say that they can smell the bodies. They can the smell in the air. It's just, oh my goodness, it's horrible. And I know there are so many private efforts and so many private teams and nonprofits and church groups that, which is beautiful, coming together, but it is a sin and it is a sham and a shame, and this administration has failed us. Once again, 855-839-1210. Have to break. We have one of the best policy people and policy experts, I believe, in the nation, who's going to break down a lot of this. And we'll go through the McCormick-Casey debate as well. I know Congress is expected to come forth to give more of our money, of course, to FEMA now that they've blown the wad on you know, others that they've brought in. But we'll talk to Andre Beliveau coming up right around the corner. Thanks for being here today. So when you hear somebody say policy, you think, I'm going to hit the, oh boy, that's a snooze, that's a sleeper. But we realize when you look at our nation, look at the economy, look at the energy policy, look at jobs, look at the border or lack thereof, look at the Middle East on fire. That's what I said yesterday. You know, Middle East on fire. We have, you know, our southern states underwater, and all of us certainly burdened by the, and we hope to be unburdened soon, maybe November 5th, by the policies of the current administration as far as fiscal policies. So policy matters. And that really brings me to a guest you know well, Andre Beliveau, who's been here many times. I think one of the best policy experts when you think about especially energy and where we're going here in Pennsylvania and then zooming out to the entire nation. And then you think about in Pennsylvania, you know, the House of Representatives, we've talked about House Bill 2277. We've talked about Josh Shapiro, regulations, jobs leaving. So welcome in, Andre Beliveau. Thanks for being here today.
Hey, good morning, Don. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. It's our pleasure for sure. So first of all, I don't know if you were able to see, because I do want to weave in, if I can, the debate last night between Dave McCormick, who I will point out has never in his life, has never been a politician, and he was somebody who grew up here in Pennsylvania, somebody who served as a combat veteran, you know, served on the in Iraq, on the front lines, if you will, and then went on to being working in the private sector and at a very high level, certainly in the financial world. And then we have Bob Casey Jr., who is well known, obviously, because of his famous beloved father, but somebody who has been a career politician by all accounts here in Pennsylvania and has a big name and lives off the family name and the legacy. But I want to weave in last night's debate, if I can, as well, speaking about energy and some of the policies and how that looks and how they differ. So let's start, if we can, Andre, talking about, you know, where we left off, I think, one of the last times we spoke, and that was Governor Josh Shapiro, the Reliable Energy Sustainability Standards, talking about House Bill 2277. I know you wanted to talk about this. Where are we as far as regulations, as far as policies here in Pennsylvania, and what it means for all of us?
Sure. Well, so there was supposed to be a committee vote at the state capitol on Tuesday on the program you just mentioned, the PRESS, which is Governor Shapiro and the Democrats' proposal to essentially cut grid reliability in half and increase electric bills for ratepayers across Pennsylvania, all in the name of answering to their renewable energy lobbyists and green energy donors by changing our alternative energy portfolio standard by increasing the amount of intermittency we have in the grid, which that means you're going to be paying more for less reliable energy. This obviously doesn't make sense, and for whatever reason, in their infinite wisdom, they decided to pull the bill from committee. So we can all we can sleep better tonight knowing that at least we live to fight another day. So that bill was actually pulled from committee, which is great. But I think when we're looking at kind of the totality of the landscape, you mentioned the debate last night. Obviously, we just had the vice presidential debate the other night with J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. You know, I think that all this is interesting. And I think, especially if we go back to Tuesday night and then we see some subsequent interviews that have happened after that. I mean, Kamala Harris is, I think, actually asking us to be unburdened by what has been. She allegedly says that she's changed her tune on fracking. We've now heard it from her mouth several times. She says she will not ban fracking. So I'm going to take her at her word because she's saying it. But she also said something in an interview this week that I think is saying the quiet part out loud. She, in the same vein, she said, I'm not going to ban fracking. She then followed that up and says, we don't have to ban fracking to do all the work that we need to do to have a clean energy economy. And that right there to me is that's the quiet part out loud. Mm-hmm. That's the canary in the coal mines. That is her signal that, take her record for what it is. And, what has the record been? The record's been an LNG pause. It's been an EPA that wants to absolutely get rid of reliable hydrocarbon power plants. It's been the Inflation Reduction Act poisoning our energy markets, changing price signals, increasing costs for ratepayers. You've seen your electric bills go up. So she was right. She doesn't have to ban fracking. It could be death by a thousand cuts to American energy. Get rid of good jobs, raise energy costs for everybody, and make our grid less reliable. And I think overall, that's the policy trend we're seeing from the left. They're trying to moderate. Which I'm glad she's not going to ban fracking, but if you're still going to do a thousand other things that are going to be detrimental to the energy environment, and again, I think we should just take them at their word, what they're saying, and look at their records. And to me, the record is pretty clear.
If I can, because McCormick and Casey at last night's debate, there will be another debate mid-October locally in Philadelphia this time at 6 ABC. But on this one, McCormick Casey being asked about fracking specifically, and I'll begin with McCormick as he answers how he plans to balance the economy and mentions the fracking and the energy policies.
How do you plan to balance supporting the industries while also protecting the environment? You have 60 seconds.
Listen, what the Democrats have done and Bob Casey's voted for has been the most idiotic energy policy I've ever seen. So first of all, we constrained our natural resources, particularly fracking around the world in Pennsylvania. You don't have to ban fracking to ban fracking. All the things he's voted for and supports bans fracking. And essentially what's happened is we've lost our ability to be energy dominant. We've hurt ourselves in terms of creating these great jobs. It's not just not losing jobs. We have the fourth largest natural gas reserves in the world. We're blessed. And this natural gas is the way to a clean environment. Because of fracking, we've reduced carbon emissions in the United States by about 20%. Exporting our natural gas around the world world and replacing coal-fired plants in India is the path to reducing carbon. I'm an environmentalist. I'm a conservationist. I also want great jobs for Pennsylvania, and I want to be secure. Bob Casey, Bob Casey has made us more dependent on China because these huge subsidies for EVs and solar panels, we have to buy from China. So 70% of the lithium batteries and the solar panels come from China. I can't think of a more stupid set of policies,
okay.
And I'm anxious to hear
time
the senator defend
Time is up, sir. Mr. Casey,
them.
Same question.
So we'll get to we'll let Casey tell his side, but just your analysis, Andre Belliveau, if you would, as far as do you agree with McCormick or there's some parts that you're critical of what he said?
Well, I mean, I think when we're talking strictly about policy and a policy direction, which I would 100% mm-hmm. encourage all your listeners to go to the CommonwealthFoundation.org, read our energy policy platform, and compare what we're saying is good policy to what you're hearing out there, and let the data and the facts speak for themselves. I will say, I mean, there's certainly some things there in a policy direction that we advocate for, policies we advocate for in the Commonwealth Foundation. I mean, absolutely. I mean, with the policy landscape we're seeing in Pennsylvania, we are not right now unlocking our full economic potential, particularly when it comes to the natural gas industry, but even broader in the energy industry. We've seen some good things happen, like we saw at Three Mile Island, a private partnership that's free market, free markets working, and the industry working with private industry. That's great. But we're the second largest producer of natural gas in the country. We have literally the keystone in Pennsylvania to Americans' energy demand. We can meet that demand with natural gas, but we are, in-state permitting is a serious issue. Things like an LNG ban at the federal level obviously does not allow us to expand into global markets. So yeah, I mean, there's so much government red tape that needs to get out of the way for Pennsylvania's energy economy to thrive. And really deliver for American energy independence. If we're serious about American energy security and independence, then absolutely. I mean, we have to be getting rid of these regulations. And there is, of course, a way to do this responsibly. They create this false dichotomy. You either have to care about the environment or you have to, care about reliable energy. And these things work hand in hand. Our own independent fiscal office in Pennsylvania has shown how we've reduced carbon emissions by transitioning to more robust usage of natural gas, which the left and the environmentalist left would like to absolutely ignore. So, we have the potential to not only provide reliable energy, but to do so clean. We're the cleanest economy in the world here in the United States, and Pennsylvania has the answer to keep us going in that trajectory. So I think hearing policies that reflect that are certainly policy directions that I would support personally, and I believe that we advocate for at the Commonwealth Foundation.
And so I'll just, to be fair, I'll play the other side because we stopped before we could get to Senator Casey's reaction because fracking, I think, is emerging as this pivotal issue in Pennsylvania in this Senate race. It's one of the biggest issues. So here's his response to that.
Supporting the natural gas industry and protecting the environment. You have 60 seconds.
Dennis, my record's pretty clear on this. Number one is I supported legislation just 2 years ago that made the greatest investment in clean energy in American history, allowing us to combat climate change, and at the same time have supported an all-the-above energy strategy for Pennsylvania. We have natural gas. I've always supported it in the extraction of natural gas. He's been the same guy who lies about where he lives has been lying about my position on fracking. I voted against a fracking ban. He won't tell you that because he doesn't want to talk about his own record as a hedge fund CEO.
And so your reaction to that with, if you would, Andre.
Yeah, so I mean, he used one of my least favorite phrases, which is all of the above energy, or all of the above energy policies. And again, you can go to the CommonwealthFoundation.org. I wrote an article for this in National Review. And it's not just Democrats. Republicans do this all the time. Even some of my favorite policy analysts say this all the time. And some of our friends kind of in the sort of wonky energy industry, they try to use this to moderate and say we need all of the above, which is it's really a blank check to the Green New Deal and is really a blank check to some of these policies that are just going to make energy more expensive and less reliable. So what I would prefer lawmakers and those running for office who are putting out policy platforms and we need lawmakers and politicians to be advocating for reliable and affordable energy. We've advocated in state in Pennsylvania for lawmakers in Harrisburg to adopt reliability language in statute, something that's source neutral, that allows all sources to compete on equal terms of reliability instead of, you know, right now we have the government picking winners and losers. And, of course, you know, with the progressives always want to favor, you know, wind and solar. But, you know, we think we should just be prioritizing reliable and affordable instead of just blank checks to all of the above. And anyway, so those are the policies that we would advocate for and that we would hope anyone left, right, and center would adopt these kinds of policies that are going to lead us towards a reliable and affordable energy future.
When, you know, and I feel embarrassed for those moderators on Tuesday who made their second question in the VP debate about climate change when we have people, you know, dying in our southern states. But,
let me comment on that real quick.
Yeah.
I mean, I worked in the North Carolina legislature. I worked in North Carolina politics. I was born in upstate New York, but I'm a North Carolinian at heart. I spent so much time down there working in policy, and that question really just that became personal to me. I think it's absolutely acceptable and right for us to have honest questions about climate and about environmental conservation, but to try to link what we're seeing in our southern states and in western North Carolina in particular, where it hit home for me, that you're going to just, you know, deflect about talking about the real life crisis right now, people who are actually suffering and the economic question around that and the things that we need for resiliency. And instead of talking about that, you want to make it about a more esoteric conversation of a broader question of climate change. That was personally offensive to me. And I think people, once again, it just shows how irresponsible the left wants to talk about these issues. There are ways to responsibly talk about environmental conservation and climate, and linking those two things together the way they did is irresponsible.
Yeah, it struck me that way as well. With Pennsylvania, I know that as far as climate change, all these different debates, they always ask about climate change. But even the Commonwealth polls that I've seen, Is climate change in the top 10? Where does that rate as far as when the Commonwealth, I know you put out questionnaires and polling and surveys. Where do you find that something like an issue of climate change? And believe me, I think we're all for clean air and clean water. I'm not trying to diminish it. But in the scheme of what we're dealing with right now, what do the Commonwealth Foundation with your surveys show people care about most, and where do they rate climate change?
Sure, and we're actually going to have an updated poll coming out in the next week and a half, so definitely keep your eyes on that. Maybe we can chat when we get some of those updated numbers out in release. But in the last two that we did this year, it doesn't even come close to the economy. Obviously, people are much more concerned about the economy and inflation. And in energy policy in particular, I mean, our polling showed that Pennsylvanians were not willing to pay a dollar more to combat climate change in the face of the rising electric costs. That was their number one concern. They were far more concerned. And I mean, it was an overwhelming supermajority of Pennsylvanians, bipartisanly cared a lot more about the rising costs of energy. They were more concerned about the reliability of our energy grid. They fully support the expansion of our natural resources and our natural gas infrastructure. Those things are you know, legions ahead of people where they're thinking about climate change. And when you ask them about that, they want to be responsible and good citizens and show good civic leadership. You know, they'll do things and take personal interventions in their everyday lives to be good stewards of the environment and to help. But they just don't want the government, you know, putting their thumb on the scale and forcing them through all kinds of just draconian regulations to do all these kinds of things. They're just going to increase costs. So, I mean, Pennsylvanians understand, I think, they understand, and our polling shows that they obviously, like everybody else, responsible people care about clean air and clean water, but it's certainly not a priority for them when they're thinking overall about what policies matter the most.
Andre Béliveau, thank you so much. Senior Manager of Energy Policy there at the Commonwealth Foundation. Until next time, my friend, thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Dawn.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we'll talk more about it, and we'll I do please make sure, Dan Borowski, that I get to we got to get to Liz Cheney, because this is so rich. Cheney is campaigning with Vice President Kamala Harris in Wisconsin.
It makes no sense. today.
And what she said, right, was so ironic. Wait, do you hear? You can't even make this stuff up in this upside down land that we live in, right? Just to wrap up as far as last night's debate, maybe we'll sprinkle in some highlights and lowlights between the two. I said earlier on Kale and Co, I was kind of laughing at the answer after a while that McCormick would just very quickly, when Bob Casey would make a claim, then McCormick would go, CaseyLies.com, CaseyLies.com. And it was just, it became like almost like an audio drop, like some shows.
For your viewers tonight, I have a website that's been established today. It's just been launched, CaseyLies.com.
CaseyLies.com.
That's great.
We should just start dropping that in all the shows. CaseyLies.com. So, you know, there's Bob Casey. He speaks a little. And then CaseyLies.com. It was just, it became humor. For some reason, it cracked me up.
Should we credit Kevin Poles?
I think
listening and GregStockerSucks.com?
Yeah, it was. Then that's, he should have done, that would have been funny. CaseySucks.com.
I do have the Liz Cheney clip ready for you now. Sorry about that.
So let me just wrap this up before we get to Liz Cheney, because I want you to hear this. This is really rich and ironic. But as far as the fracking situation go, when you think of fracking, big business, big jobs here in Pennsylvania, we produce more than 7 trillion cubic feet of natural gas every single year. When you talk about America and being energy independent, Trump talks a lot about that. And I know that McCormick has talked about it as well as others. So with Casey seeking his fourth term, has he ever actually said, I want to ban fracking? Has he said those words? I can't find a spot where he actually said those words. What his voting record shows and what we can find with him talking about is that he has voted for policies, and this would be along with the Biden-Harris team. He has voted for policies and talked a lot about the restrictions. And so basically, if you are greatly restricting, and this is something I learned from Governor Burgum when I met him in person at our great, one of those Trump Force 47 events. I think that one was Delco or Chesco. I get him. But that was something that an energy expert like Governor Burgum put so well as he talked about it. If you greatly restrict something and you make it so difficult to do the business or make it so inefficient for the private sector to invest in, then you've essentially banned it. That was what Governor Burgum said at the point. So I'll just point that out to you as far as I fact check. I'm always going to be fair. And you, of course, should always, always, when it comes to your vote, do your own research, because I just feel like the media is not really given the fair shake to one side. So let's listen now. This is something we none of us thought we'd ever see in our lifetime, right?
Zahn, hello, hello, hello.
That you have... You have the most liberal, and it's not just me saying this, I think by all accounts, the most liberal senator when she served in the United States Senate, and that is one now Vice President Kamala Harris. She is left of most of her colleagues, certainly left of Biden. Being endorsed by candidates, by former lawmakers who have been considered the most conservative. And in fact, when you think of Dick Cheney, remember when the Democrats for decades, they called him Darth Vader. They called him evil. He and his daughter, Liz Cheney, saying that these people are far, far right. And so it does make you wonder, how could Darth Vader and his daughter now endorsing somebody who is considered the far left? Why is that? Because these are the Darth Vader swamp creatures. They've all gone to the dark of the swamp, the depths of the swamp. Darth Vader's daughter in Wisconsin with lefty, our Vice President Kamala Harris. Listen to this.
I know that our security and our freedom depend upon a world in which America, with our allies, leads. And above all else, I know that the most conservative of conservative values is fidelity to our Constitution. I tell you, I have never voted for a Democrat, but this year I am proudly casting my vote for Vice President Kamala Harris. What January 6th shows us is that there is not an ounce, not an ounce of
not
compassion
an ounce.
In Donald Trump. He is petty, he is vindictive, and he is cruel. And Donald Trump is not fit to lead this good and great nation.
So that was, she talks about the fact, she talks about being vindictive. And so I just ask you, who is the real vindictive one? Donald J. Trump, who's been shot? He was shot, okay? This guy doesn't have to do this. He's not a career politician. He's not getting Halliburton money like the Cheneys. Look how rich they are. How did they get so rich? After being investigated, et cetera. And she has a Darth Vader daddy's trust fund that she gets some of that money too. Talk about vindictive. And guess what? Her state, they thought she was not fit for office. They felt she betrayed her conservative values. And they felt they fired her because they felt that she prioritized any kind of her values and her priorities. She was showing her true colors as a swamp creature. That's what the Cheneys are, swamp creatures who are in it for themselves. And what a shame and what a disappointment. Shame. We'll do the Game of Thrones shame with the Darth Vader music. Wow, that was rich. And Kamala was thrilled. And here are Democrats who used to rip shame. Into this family. Yes, shame.
Shame.
But I'll say shame. Shame with the bell.
Shame.
We'll do that much, but we don't want to see Liz Cheney walking naked through any streets like the Game of Thrones punishment.
Yeah,
that was my catty remark. Sorry, I couldn't help myself.
I just realized what she meant by it.
Are we ready for a road trip? Hey, are you taking the road trip? And I'm going to get to your calls right around the corner, 855-839-1210. I see you. I want to hear from you. But are you ready for a road trip? So we've got our Phillies here. Woo, Red October. And hopefully it's a Red October for our Phillies and Red October and November for one Donald J. Trump and for all of us as our nation looks to what's going on. So let's think about this. I do want to ask you, are you going, are you traveling to Butler, Pennsylvania? It's about five and a half hours for me to drive. It's a hike.
Yeah.
So I'm still planning on going. I have the event we talked about. So tomorrow morning at 10, we'll have fun with the kickoff, much like Dom Giordano did this week, as we're trying to just make sure everybody's registered and really promoting the vote. As far as getting out there, make sure you're registered. Make sure you get out and vote. And that's with our great friend Linda Stearns. I'll be doing that 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Talk more about that. But are you going to Butler, Pennsylvania? Elon Musk, the word came out. Elon's going to be there. They should do like a meet and greet or something. Wouldn't that be cool? So I'm very excited for that. But speaking of road trips, and what a beautiful weekend. Whatever you're doing, 79 degrees, bright sunny skies for your tomorrow. So as we go place to place, make sure your vehicle's ready to go place to place. My friends at Piazza Premium Automobiles, yes, Piazza Premium Automobiles, they're going to make sure that you and your family are safe out on the roads. These service centers of the Piazza Premium dealers, they not only handle all your regular maintenance needs, but they're also going to diagnose those possible issues before you hit the road and before they happen. Schedule the service appointment online today, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, PiazzaPremiumAutomobiles.com for that dealer nearest you. This whole tragedy striking the South is definitely, I think, uniting the Republican Party for sure. As you think about Trump visiting today and reuniting with a governor that he's, you know, they did butt heads a little bit. So this is the first time in person that he'll be meeting with Georgia's governor, and that's happening today. So we'll watch that. If they hold some kind of a news conference and it happens, you know, within the next hour or so, although we have Trump campaign folks coming on right at 11, but we'll try to bring that live to you. But just updating this, that in a historic sense, you know, you think about 215 deaths confirmed. the death toll rising, third deadliest storm of the 21st century after Hurricane Katrina back in 2005, and then Hurricane Maria back in 2017. So it's believed that as the death toll rises, this certainly is going to make the top three, which is heart-wrenching. So let's return to that topic as far as what's happening there. A lot of private, different individuals, and that is from people who have donkeys. They have, you know, three donkeys and a person hiking up mountains with supplies, bringing things like insulin, water, medical supplies. You have private operators coming from across the country and donating. This is a grassroots citizens effort, as many people are continuing to pile on the situation and say that FEMA is not doing enough, Biden-Harris not doing enough, and more importantly, quick enough, right? That was, you know, the seconds matter when you have people who perhaps are trapped, and that's what we're seeing. So, and as I say, there's about a 25% chance of showers in the forecast, especially in western North Carolina. That's the hardest hit area. And so it's a shame that you have fog and rain. And that it just inhibits these rescue efforts, especially by private folks. Dan, where do you want to begin here?
So let's go back to Jordan Lanning. That was on Jesse Waters last night. He kind of gives a firsthand perspective as to what it was like to be in that storm. And then I want to take this call from Kathy in Bucks County. Take a listen.
Take it one day at a time. Just trying to survive.
What have you seen? What have you witnessed? How's life down there?
I mean, I went to bed the night before the storm. I went around when it was starting and nothing was flooding. So I went to bed thinking everything was fine, woke up the next day, and there was over 20 trees down around my complex. And flooding was disastrous. We weren't allowed to, I couldn't get out of the house for about 2 days, and it just got worse and worse as you went out.
And so as you hear this, let's listen in from Kathy in Bucks County. Good morning, Kathy.
Hi, Dawn. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. First, I wanted to say that I just think it's disgusting and very disturbing how our government has handled this whole situation. My heart breaks for these people that are out there. You know, there's no reason why we shouldn't have money to take care of our own people when we've given money to people that don't even belong here. I got a great idea. Why doesn't Kamala give some of her money from her campaign donations and put that money into helping out the people out there? And instead of being on her campaign and doing all rallies, why isn't she out there with her hard hat on helping these people, along with Joe Biden sitting as a comfy little beach chair out there helping out the people? This is the most disgusting thing. And like I said, there's just so many topics that you can touch on, mm-hmm. that one's just as bad as the next. And I'm ashamed of this government.
Get the
ashamed
hell
of them.
Off the beach.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
It is shameful.
Absolutely.
Kathy. You're right. And so it's the incompetence of this administration. You know, I'm just looking at some of the images, and we're not, and that's the other piece of it, the coverage as far as national media. Can you only imagine, and I'll take you back, Kathy, do you remember this when we talk about the worst storms in Katrina and how at the time George W. Bush, President Bush at the time, was being ripped by the media?
I remember that.
Remember?
I remember that. I do remember that. And I remember, but he was there. But he did come.
On day two.
And he was there. And what's so disgusting is the fact that if this was Trump that was vice president or president, and he was doing what they were doing, they would be hanging him by his ears. It would be that bad. You know, yes. I mean, it's just double standards all the way around. And we have so many issues in this country as it is. But to see our poor people that are being killed by this storm and that are being left literally hang out to dry, and they're not giving them food, shelter. I mean, we've donated the Samaritan's Purse. We're trying to do our part of it. But, I mean, everybody, every American that's got a dime in their pocket, donate it. You know how much it would add up to? Help these people out, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah, and so all you see, and thank you, Kathy. I really appreciate you. And it's so true. There's just story after story. There's a story that has come out this morning about these twin babies, and they died alongside their mommy. They're named among the dead as this death toll is just rising this morning. It's just, it breaks your heart. And, you know, all of these hundreds of people missing. I mean, we talked about the hero pilot yesterday who was able to fly out the newborn baby that was having health problems, as well as an elderly person who needed the oxygen. But you're hearing about some of the images of people who are, they, because you can't really maneuver, so they're inside, let's say, a structure for shelter, but the water, you know, they're streaming water, so they're in water, maybe up to their waist. This is not healthy, as you think about the heat, you know what I mean, and the sewage that gets into that water. My goodness.
I would even make the argument, and talk about this, Dawn, that FEMA might be impeding the efforts by private citizens. Tim Kennedy, UFC person, fighter, is on the ground there, was on Fox News and had this to say. Take a listen.
I mean, because this happened on Friday. It's now Wednesday. Are they still not there anywhere? What are you seeing from FEMA in the federal response, if any?
I mean, they're present. They're in the way. They are directly interrupting our ability to conduct missions and operations.
Huh.
And I'm not going to disparage anybody, because we are trying to work within partner relationships, both government and non-government entities within state and federal and county. You know, I went to put a couple of people into a hotel last night, and they have a security guard at the hotel. And I said, oh, we're so sorry. The entire hotel has been booked for federal employees. And I was like, no, I have people that were just pulled out of a mountain that are living out in the hills, and there's not a place for me to put them because we have federal employees that are staying in the hotel. I slept in this white car last night. I smell like foot and death right now, as does every single person on our team. Not a single one of us slept. We got done maybe at 3 o'clock. The moment the sun was up and we could fly helicopters again, we were back in the air, and we have not stopped. And I was like on the fence about trying to get on this program or not. I want people to understand how incredible this organization is, mm-hmm. Save Our Allies, and all the work that all of these volunteers are doing. But people, this is biblical level devastation.
Yep.
This is apocalyptic, the things that we see out there.
And that's just it. I think it's disingenuous for and inappropriate for the media. And I see headlines as I'm speaking about climate change could have prevented this. Well, you know, first of all, perhaps all of those conversations can be had later. But first of all, it's just gross to me to have that question, and that is a headline. But also, when you look back, they're looking back to 1916 and talking about storms back then. So to make it the top of mind issue that the media is trying to push, it's like I say, it's obnoxious for sure. Kathy, thanks for your call. We'll get to the other calls moving forward. 855-839-1210. Great guest. Trump campaign right ahead.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.